The Oracle Network.
Hello, and welcome back to True Crime Cat Lawyer. I'm your host, Elise, joined by my co-host, Winston the Cat. Every other week, Winston and I will bring you a new story about a murder, disappearance, or serial killer, with a special focus on cases from our hometown, the Pacific Northwest. Just a reminder, this podcast contains content of a graphic nature that might not be suitable for all listeners, including descriptions of violence, sexual assault, and crimes against animals and children. Listener discretion is advised. Hey everyone, welcome back to True Crime Cat Lawyer. Just a few quick announcements before we get started. Thank you so much for all the downloads so far this month. Just a reminder, Winston and I are donating all of our ad proceeds from the month of August as a sponsorship of an adorable cat at the Oregon Humane Society. So please keep listening and telling all your friends and family so we can donate a lot of money. We also have a couple fun promos going on for our one-year anniversary. If you join our Patreon at any level, you'll receive an exclusive cat person pin. And if you join the $5 crazy cat person level, you'll receive an anniversary gift pack. This includes a True Crime Cat Lawyer keychain, a cat person button, and a True Crime Cat Lawyer button. Both promos are only available during the month of August. Join now so you don't miss out. Finally, we're doing a huge giveaway for our one-year anniversary. Head over to our Twitter or Instagram page to see the post and get all the details. Okay, now that we've covered all of that, today's case is a heartbreaking example of the ugly side of love. 26-year-old Anna Rypkina was born and raised in Moscow, Russia. She had recently gotten out of a 7-year-long relationship and she was looking for love again. Anna was a sweet, loving, and caring person who loved cats and rock music. Anna was smart and worked in an office job at IKEA. In 2016, Anna joined a Russian social networking site to meet new people. And that's where she met 26-year-old Will Hargrove. Anna and Hargrove had a lot in common, particularly their love for music. The two began exchanging Facebook and video chats almost daily. Anna had a fun sense of humor and would send Hargrove funny memes. This kicked off a whirlwind romance for the two, culminating in a 10-day trip where Anna went to Oregon to meet Hargrove. Unfortunately, Anna got her Portlands mixed up and ended up in Portland, Maine instead of Portland, Oregon. When Anna arrived in Oregon, she spent 10 days with Hargrove, meeting his friends and going to the beach. Near the end of the trip, Hargrove proposed and Anna accepted. Anna returned to Russia to tie up loose ends before she made the move to Oregon and started planning her wedding to Hargrove. There was just one hiccup. Unbeknownst to Anna, Hargrove was dating another woman at the same time. 33-year-old Michelle Chavez was a married mother of two who met Hargrove while he was working as a bouncer at the Peacock Bar and Grill. Chavez was a cab driver at the time, and the two quickly formed a friendship. Chavez told Hargrove she was in a loveless marriage and explained that her husband had agreed to an open relationship. Chavez and Hargrove began an intimate relationship after Chavez's husband supposedly gave her his blessing. In an unexplainable turn of events, Hargrove actually moved into the Chavez household in Albany. He rented a spare bedroom in the home where his lover's husband and two kids lived. Anna even stayed in the home with everyone when she came to Oregon to meet Hargrove. Between the time Anna left in January and was set to come back in March, the love triangle began to sour. Again, Anna was completely in the dark about Hargrove and Chavez's relationship. But Chavez knew about Anna, and she was pissed. According to Chavez, she and Hargrove had an open relationship, much like the relationship Chavez had with her husband. Apparently, Chavez was under the impression that she and Hargrove could have sex with other people while, quote, remaining emotionally committed to each other, end quote. It's not clear if Hargrove had the same understanding. What's super weird is that Chavez initially thought Anna would be a quote-unquote addition to her relationship with Hargrove. At least that's what Hargrove led her to believe. But while Anna was packing up her life in Russia, Chavez quote-unquote got nosy and started snooping through Hargrove's phone. To her surprise, Chavez saw messages between Hargrove and Anna saying that he wanted to marry Anna. This wasn't part of Chavez's agreement with Hargrove. She had no idea that Hargrove was planning a life with Anna. Just Anna. Chavez confronted Hargrove about the messages, but he basically blew her off and nothing really came from their conversation. Hargrove continued having sex with Chavez after Anna went back to Russia, so Chavez thought things would be ending soon between Hargrove and Anna. But curiosity got the better of Chavez, and she snooped through Hargrove's phone again. She found out Anna would be returning to Oregon in March of 2017, and this was the catalyst for Anna's murder. Chavez told Hargrove that Anna wouldn't be allowed to stay in her house when she came back to Oregon. This prompted Hargrove to move into his own apartment. Anna arrived in Oregon in March. She and Hargrove set a date for their wedding, March 23, 2017, at the Oregon coast. Anna brought a wedding dress from Russia, and they planned to get married at a park near a lighthouse. For Anna, it seemed like she'd found her Prince Charming, and they were going to have a fairy tale wedding before living happily ever after. So March 23rd came, and Anna put on her wedding dress, and the couple headed out to the coast. Hargrove stopped at Walmart to buy the couple's wedding rings. It would later be revealed that while he was in the store, Hargrove was on the phone talking to Chavez. That's right. He was talking to his girlfriend while he was buying wedding rings for him and his fiancée. I literally cannot with this man. When Hargrove and Anna arrived at the park, it ended up being closed. On top of that, Hargrove told Anna and his friends who'd been invited to the wedding that the officiant called to cancel because he was sick. It should be noted that there's no evidence Hargrove ever actually hired or planned to hire an officiant for that date. But the saddest part of the day to me was the surveillance footage that police later obtained from a McDonald's drive-thru. Anna was sitting in Hargrove's car in her wedding dress. This should have been the happiest day of her life, and here she was grabbing a fast food dinner, probably heartbroken that her special day hadn't gone according to plan. When Hargrove and Anna returned home, Hargrove left Anna in their apartment by herself and didn't return until sometime the next day. But apparently, this was nothing new. Neighbors would later tell police that Anna was often left in the apartment alone. According to these same neighbors, Anna almost never left the apartment. The way Hargrove treated Anna is just appalling. But she stayed with Hargrove, and she still had no idea about his relationship with Chavez or that Hargrove was splitting his time between Anna and Chavez. Hargrove told Chavez that he'd called off the wedding because he didn't love Anna. He said Anna would be heading back to Russia. But a few weeks after the failed wedding, Anna was still living with Hargrove, and Chavez had had enough. Chavez had been getting a lot of pressure from Hargrove to leave her husband, and she was finally ready to do it. So Chavez gave Hargrove an ultimatum. But it was more than just a, you have to choose her or me. Chavez told Hargrove to, quote, fix this, end quote, and, quote, get rid of her, end quote. Now, I don't know about you, but get rid of her seems a little ominous to me. Chavez later told 48 Hours she didn't want Anna to die, she just didn't want Anna in their lives anymore. The ultimatum came in early April. Hargrove and Chavez planned to move into an apartment together without Anna. The longer Anna remained in Oregon, the more impatient and angry Chavez became. Hargrove kept promising he'd break up with Anna, but Chavez called him a liar. She wanted reassurances of Hargrove's, quote, emotional commitment to her, end quote. The two exchanged texts on April 15th. Chavez was getting ready to leave her husband, and Hargrove was supposed to, quote, get rid of Anna, end quote. Chavez assumed this meant Anna would be headed back to Russia for good. On April 16th, Hargrove told Chavez that Anna was leaving. He was going to get his things ready and then meet Chavez at her house around midnight, but Hargrove never showed up. On April 17th, Anna's body was found on a remote logging road in Alsea, approximately 35 minutes from the Corvallis apartment where she'd been living with Hargrove. At the time Anna's body was found, investigators weren't able to immediately identify her because she was a Russian citizen. What investigators did know was that Anna had a single gunshot wound to the head. Because police didn't find a gun at the crime scene, they immediately began investigating the death as a homicide. If it had been an accident or a suicide, the gun should have been found with the body. As police searched the crime scene, they didn't find any ID or cell phone on the body. The crime scene was relatively sparse for clues. Police did find cigarette cartons, candy wrappers, and fast food trash near Anna's body, but they couldn't be sure if this garbage had anything to do with Anna. It could just be random trash. Nevertheless, they bagged it as evidence and it was sent off for processing. This trash proved to be the key to finding out who killed Anna. Pressed up against the bag of fast food trash was a KFC receipt. On the receipt was a debit card number, which led police to a man named Kevin Thomas. Police immediately tracked Thomas down. Thomas told them he was friends with William Hargrove. The two ate at KFC every Friday. Thomas told police Hargrove was involved in a contentious love triangle with his fiancée Anna and his girlfriend Michelle. Hargrove had even asked Thomas if he could borrow his shotgun to, quote, go up to the woods and blow off some steam, end quote. Of course, police wanted to speak with Hargrove, and Hargrove had several interesting things to share with police. First, he admitted that he dumped his KFC trash, but he said it was at the Alsea Mercantile, not the remote wooded area where Anna's body had been found. Second, Hargrove tried to convince police that he barely knew Anna. He said they'd only been on two dates, and he had tried to break up with her after finding out that she posted an engagement announcement on Facebook. Hargrove even called Anna psychotic for doing this. On a side note, I think disparaging the name of someone you killed is just disgusting. Anna can't defend herself because she's no longer here. It's just gross and disrespectful. Finally, Hargrove told police he last saw Anna in mid-March, nearly a month prior to her murder. The good news is that police weren't buying any of Hargrove's BS. Once they'd identified Anna's body, police delved further into Anna's life. Police had ATM and surveillance footage that showed Hargrove taking money out of Anna's bank account and using that money to pay his car insurance payment and buy cigars and Star Wars Legos. You heard that right. This man killed his fiance and then had the audacity to steal her money and buy toys. Like, what the actual fuck? At any rate, once Hargrove was presented with this information, he asked for a lawyer. So police arrested him for the murder of Anna. Police found Kevin Thomas's shotgun in Hargrove's car, and it was determined to be the murder weapon. The shotgun only had Hargrove's fingerprints on it. Hargrove was indicted for the murder of 26-year-old Anna Repkina. Hargrove's trial didn't begin until October 2019. And I just want to pause here for a second and address a common misconception people have. As you're probably aware, defendants in criminal cases have the right to a speedy trial. And it's an important right. I mean, the jails can't house criminal defendants for a long period of time. They just don't have the room. But here's the thing. A murder trial can be extremely complex. Not to mention the potential sentence is often life in prison or the death penalty. So it often takes both parties extra time to prepare their case. They have witnesses, exhibits, and evidence, expert witnesses, pretrial motions and hearings, all to address pretrial concerns. All of that is time-consuming and explains why we often see such a delay between indictment and trial. And we saw this play out in Hargrove's case. his defense attorney filed a 97-page motion to exclude cell phone data and search warrant evidence taken from both Hargrove's Corvallis apartment and Chavez's home in Albany, as well as two vehicles that were owned by Hargrove. Hargrove's defense attorney tried to argue that the cell phone data, which was used to justify the search warrants police obtained, was actually fruit of the poisonous tree. In other words, the cell phone data and other evidence should be ruled inadmissible. Ultimately, the judge disagreed with the defense. He ruled that all of the search warrants were valid, therefore all evidence gathered from those searches would be admissible. So, after swearing in the jury of 5 women and 7 men, Hargrove's trial for Anna's murder was underway. The prosecution's opening statement lasted 90 minutes. Their case against Hargrove would include 75 witnesses, surveillance footage, and cell phone data. One of the witnesses the prosecution offered was Alyssa Blythe, who was a regular at the Peacock Bar where Hargrove used to work. She testified that on the evening of April 16th, around 10:30 or 11 p.m., she had seen Hargrove getting drunk at the bar. Blythe asked Hargrove if he wanted to go outside for a cigarette, and when they did, Hargrove, quote, broke down crying, end quote. Hargrove told Blythe that he was a piece of shit and a terrible person. Blythe comforted Hargrove, and then the two parted ways. Another witness, Ryan Butler, testified about Hargrove's relationship with Chavez. Butler worked with Hargrove at the Peacock, and he told the jury that he'd witnessed a heated argument between Hargrove and Chavez about a week before Anna's murder. Butler also testified that he saw Hargrove at the Peacock as well on the night of April 16th. According to Butler, Hargrove, quote, looked kind of distraught and had tears in his eyes, end quote. The prosecution also presented the testimony of Stevie Ray. Ray knew Anna and Hargrove from the Peacock. Ray and Anna had become fast friends, and Ray testified that Anna planned to have her bachelorette party on April 22nd. So it seemed like Anna and Hargrove had set a new date for the wedding, meaning Hargrove had never actually broken things off with Anna. Ray also testified that she talked to Anna on the phone one night, and Anna told her that Hargrove had been drinking a lot and that he had gotten violent, which scared Anna. While motive isn't required to prove someone committed the crime of murder, juries often respond to testimony and evidence better when they can pinpoint a reason why someone would kill the victim. So one of the prosecution's motives was money. Let's go back to the ATM and store surveillance footage I mentioned earlier. At 6:46 p.m., ATM surveillance showed Hargrove withdrawing $202.50 from Anna's bank account. About 20 minutes later, Hargrove withdrew another $603 from Anna's bank account at another ATM. After Hargrove took the money out of Anna's account, he deposited it into his own account and called his car insurance company to pay the monthly payment he owed. Hargrove was in financial distress at the time of Anna's murder. Despite the fact that he was working as an oil change technician in Albany, Hargrove was worried about his car being repossessed and his car insurance was on the verge of cancellation prior to Anna's murder. So in case you didn't think Hargrove was a piece of shit before, now prosecutors had presented evidence that he killed Anna in part so that he could pay his monthly car insurance payment and buy Star Wars Legos. But the most compelling evidence the prosecution offered was the testimony of Michelle Chavez. Chavez would spend 14 hours testifying for the prosecution. She testified about her affair with Hargrove, her shitty relationship with her husband, her ultimatum to Hargrove, all of it. Chavez testified that her husband knew about the affairs, that's right, affairs meaning plural, that she had had with other men to, quote, fill the emotional and physical void in her life, end quote. Chavez testified that she was attracted to the attention Hargrove gave her and the chemistry they seemed to have. Chavez testified that Hargrove called her in the afternoon on April 16th and told her that he drove his car off the road to avoid hitting a deer. He was in Alsea and said he needed Chavez's help changing a flat tire. So Chavez agreed to come help him. She left her family's Easter dinner and she drove out to Alsea. When she got there, she and Hargrove argued, then they went for a drive and had sex in his car off a secluded road. Keep in mind, at this point, Anna had already been murdered and her dead body was just a few short miles away. Travis's testimony was corroborated by cell phone data, which placed Hargrove near Follett Road, where Anna's body was later found. Travis also testified that she initially lied to police. She provided an alibi to them as requested by Hargrove, but Travis later admitted this to police. And she didn't seem to be surprised when police told her that Hargrove was suspected of murdering Anna. A few interesting pieces of information came out at trial. First, Travis was in possession of Anna's cell phone. And two, Travis had been to the location where Anna's body was found 1 month prior to Anna's murder. Travis claimed Hargrove had taken her to that spot, but she had nothing to do with Anna's murder and she had no reason to want Anna dead. To which I call bullshit. Travis definitely had a reason to want Anna dead. It's called jealousy. But prosecutors did point out that the forensic evidence didn't implicate Travis in Anna's murder. Although there was no cell phone data for Travis's phone from 5:21 to 6:06 p.m., an FBI agent testified that, quote, a user needs to interact with the cell system, sending a text or making a call in order to leave a location record, end quote. Travis's cell phone data after 6:06 p.m. places her at the Alcea Mercantile, then at her mother's house in Philomath, and then her home in Albany. According to the FBI expert, quote, police can link only two people to the crime scene, the victim and the accused, end quote. There was no evidence to place Travis at the crime scene on the day of the murder. No charges have ever been filed against Travis. Another interesting and bizarre tidbit that came out at trial was that Hargrove had launched a deep dive into researching time travel after Anna was murdered. He started messaging random people on WhatsApp, quote, asking for advice on how to travel back in time to correct a horrible mistake for his best friend, end quote. Hargrove took screenshots of websites that, quote, show you how to do a particular spell to travel back in time. He was so desperate to get the time travel information that he offered his soul as a reward to strangers on the internet who might be able to help him, end quote. And then it was the defense's turn to present their case. The defense's opening argument took 45 minutes. Their argument was that Travis shot Anna in a fit of jealous rage and then threatened Hargrove with her, quote, family connections to an outlaw motorcycle gang, end quote, in order to keep him quiet. Hargrove's defense attorneys said that Hargrove had been given permission to access and use Anna's bank account and that Hargrove had planned to use the money to, quote, flee the area to get away from Travis, end quote. You know, because of the supposed motorcycle gang threat. The jury deliberated less than 3 hours before finding Hargrove guilty of Anna's murder, as well as the additional charges of theft and identity theft for stealing and using Anna's debit card. In January 2020, Hargrove was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole in 25 years. It's been a while since I've come across a case that left me feeling shortchanged. Don't get me wrong, I absolutely believe Hargrove killed Anna and he belongs in jail. But what about Michelle Travis? Do you guys think she had more involvement than she led everyone to believe? At the very least, is Travis morally responsible for Anna's murder because she gave Hargrove that ultimatum? Head over to our Facebook discussion group and leave your thoughts or leave your comments on our social media posts for this episode. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Please subscribe and leave a review if you like the show. You can email case suggestions or comments to truecrimecatlawyer@gmail.com. The links for our social media pages are included in the show notes. You can find our discussion group on Facebook by searching for True Crime Cat Lawyer in the group section. And if you want more content, head over to Patreon to join one of our available tiers. You can get monthly mini and bonus episodes as well as early access to our main episodes. Finally, if you're interested in learning more about my co-host, you can check out her Instagram at WinstonTheCatPDX. Thanks again for listening and stay tuned for our next episode.